This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. As we stay home to stay safe, our disconnect with the outside world could also be resulting in a disconnect with nature and the natural world. Even prior to the coronavirus lockdowns, most of us were spending 90% of our time indoors, and many of us, especially parents, were increasingly worried that our kids were getting too much screen time and not enough green time, much to the kids' detriment. So how is this disconnect between children and the natural world linked to the decline in wildlife? You know, how can we get our kids to understand nature despite the times that we live in so that they will value it? Joining me now is naturalist Aidy Abdullah to answer these questions and more. Welcome, Aidy. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Juliet. I'm doing just fine in spite of the lockdown.
I can't imagine how it's like for you as a naturalist as well, but thank you so much for joining me today. Can we get to know you a little bit better, Aidy? I know that in, let's call it a previous life, you were a flying instructor, but now, of course, you're a naturalist, environmentalist. What drew you to this line of work?
I have my father to blame for that. At the age of 8, he offered me a birthday present. I could pick something up. And I chose a book from Life Nature Library, The Sea. From then till now, nature has been a major part of my life. Now, in my earlier incarnation, I liked flying. I went into it. But as time went on, it left something empty inside. There was something missing. And then when a chance came to actually do what I wanted to do, which is work with nature, I grabbed it to where I am now.
And you've been there for quite a while now, am I correct?
I've been in this line for 21 years.
Gosh, that's wonderful. And, you know, I was reading as a naturalist, right? You said that it's all about the future. Why do you say that?
Because when you look at how things are going, we look at the world from our point of view. Who replaces us when the time comes? Who will take over? Our children. And if they do not understand where things are going and how important they are, then what hope is there for their future? What will happen to our grandchildren?
It's scary, right? I mean, they say we're only the caretakers, right? You know, it's everything that we do. Everything should be for them. But, you know, we've messed it up pretty badly, I would say. But the youth are, of course, you know, really getting increasingly involved in, you know, the climate crisis, you know, the protests about it, you know, the climate strikes and all of that. Are you hopeful as well, you know, seeing all of those sorts of things happening?
Yes, I am. But there is one thing I have noticed. Locally, or at least in Southeast Asia, there needs to be more understanding of the fundamental. And that is what is sadly lacking.
What do you mean by that? I mean, please do explain. By the fundamentals, meaning?
Okay. People can read about, oh, the climate is changing, we need to be more carbon sensitive and all that. But some don't even understand the basic rules of it. The rules that plants take in the carbon that we produce and give us the oxygen that we need. They don't even understand that flowers, for example, are critically dependent on bees and insects to pollinate them. And these fundamentals lead to proper discussions later on where the youth can actually argue a point logically. Not just pick up a magazine and start yelling, oh, we can't do this, we can't do this, without understanding why we can't do it. And there's no better teacher than to reach out, touch a plant, understand how it works, understand what the animals do directly and indirectly for us. That, to me, is critical.
Definitely. And not having, I guess, you know, you were lucky, right? You had your dad, you know, I suppose, take you out. Did he also take you out in nature? Did he also expose you? I mean, not just your dad, you know, anyone in your life, did they also expose you to the outdoors, which also sort of brought in that love for nature as well?
Not really. The old man was too busy with his work.
Oh, no.
He was ahead of his time, I suppose. But as we grew up, we always lived in houses that had a garden. We lived in places where we're on the edge of the urban area.
Mm.
There were trees, there were plants. And I was left pretty much to explore. And because I had the books to give me the background, I did just that.
Mm-hmm.
That laid the foundation for who I am.
You remind me of Gerald Jurrell. One of my favorite books growing up was reading My Family and Other Animals. And I think he also, you know, growing up was just allowed to explore. And he also had the books and he became a naturalist as well. And such a delightful story that was. I don't know if you've ever read that or if that has had any impact on you as well.
No, I haven't read that, but I think I'm going to have to look it up.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, Aidy, we are in another MCO, unfortunately. Tough times call for tough measures, of course. But, you know, there's limited opportunity to socialize. That's also brought about lots of feelings of loneliness, of isolation, and that's, of course, taking a toll on a lot of people's well-being. But, you know, increasingly, researchers, medical practitioners, they're actually advocating that nature can counter these sorts of negative emotions, right? Lots of research increasingly supporting this view. What are your own thoughts on that?
I totally agree with it for a simple reason. To go out and see something that is natural, something that's beautiful, something that works in wondrous ways, is what makes you realize how happy you are to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go to the mall. You don't need to go out and eat in fancy restaurants. You don't need to drive around town the whole night. But just a simple garden to walk out, smell the fresh air, touch the trees, enjoy the flowers. That makes a huge difference.
How has it been like for you, you know, all the environmentalists that I've spoken to throughout the course of all these MCOs, especially when there was a very strict lockdowns and they couldn't actually get out? It was really devastating for them. How has it been for you?
I've been lucky. I live at the edge of a jungle.
Ah, bless.
And I just go walking around the taman, enjoying the fresh air, taking my dog out for a walk. And then the monkeys come to the garden all the time. So it's a bit of a laugh. But the moment it is lifted slightly, I go straight into the mangroves, which are my speciality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need too much of it. And I feel very, very happy.
And have you been seeing, you know, as I said earlier, you know, the more that we have been not allowed to venture into nature, the more we want it, right? Are you seeing, like, especially when there was, like, as you mentioned, you know, the chance to get out again, right? Were you seeing more people turning to nature or gardening or anything related to greenery and green spaces, you know, when we were allowed to get out of the house, basically?
Yes, there's been an increase. And funnily enough, some of the staff where I work have been asking, send me a photograph, say, what is this plant? What can it do? It's in my garden. Shall I get rid of it? Mm-hmm. Things like that. The appreciation of what is immediately around them mm-hmm. has increased.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me hope.
And it's been tough for the adults, no doubt, right? But gosh, for the kids, you know, it's been especially hard from them. For them, I can speak only from experience here. You know, I've got two. You know, we used to go outdoors all the time. You know, any chance we could, we go to, I don't know, KLCC Park. We go to Frim, Taman Metropolitan, Kepong, Taman Tugu, all these sorts of places, right? And you know, just not being able to be out in the green anymore has been really, really tough for them. You know, in your line of work as well, have you been noticing that, you know, that is also coming to impact the children as well?
Yes, I have. And what is sad is that you cannot explain to a young child why he can't go out. You cannot explain to a young child why everything's just indoors.
Yeah.
But the fact that a child wants to go out and wants to look gives hope. If a child is happy to remain indoors, on screen, all the time, then something is very wrong.
Yep, definitely. And speaking of that, you know, even prior to the pandemic, right, there was this this fear that kids were spending too much time on their screens, right? That they, too much screen time, not enough green time. There was even a name for it, I think. They called the crisis the nature deficit disorder. Do you think that panic was warranted?
To a degree, yes. I've had people who was taken out around the island. And the kid sees a cow for the first time, and he freaks out.
Oh, no.
What you see in a book or on TV, and that packet of meat you buy from the supermarket, and what you eat from your plate, isn't quite what is out there.
Yes. And the smells, let's not forget the smells, right? Completely different.
Yeah, it's a whole new world. But that's why it's so important. If you don't look after the children, then who takes over the fight for the next generation? If we don't look after the children, who can appreciate what we all stand to lose collectively?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is bad.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm speaking today to Aidy Abdullah. He's a naturalist. And, you know, we're talking about his work as a naturalist, but also we're focusing on, you know, why there's been a disconnect between children and the natural world, you know, why that's linked to, you know, a lot of trouble that's happening in our world, decline in wildlife, decline in biodiversity. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today is naturalist Aidy Abdullah. He has been a naturalist for over 21 years now, but he's been, you know, his love affair with nature started all the way from when he was 8 years old, I believe. So it's been a long love affair there. And we're talking about, you know, why nature is so important, especially during these lockdowns, but especially why it's important for children and for their development. I guess we were talking about that nature deficit earlier, right? As a naturalist, and you know, you've taken many people out on tours, on you know, nature walks and things like that, right? What are some of your approaches, you know, for those children who you say, those city kids who have not had any exposure to nature at all? What are some of your methods, you know, to get them to connect, to get them to understand and to appreciate all that greenery around them?
One of the best ways is to ask them a question starting with, did you know? Uh-huh. Their curiosity. Then did you know this? Did you know that? And if they get curious, then you hit them with the point. And you've got to read them very carefully. Don't overdo it, but lead them in. In fact, I've had a couple of young children who have gone into this in a big way. And I think that is the only way to do it. Pique their curiosity, fulfill the need, and then let them go from there.
What are some of your, let's call them quote-unquote success stories, you know, of some child maybe who was afraid of, I don't know, even earthworms, you know, who then ended up just wallowing in mud and just, you know, really enjoying nature and everything it has to offer?
A lot of the wallowing in mud, and you'd be surprised how important that is, you have to work on the parent. Oh, he can't touch the sand. We can't touch mud. Go wash your hand.
Yes.
It doesn't work that way. Like when I was going around Kapong Metropolitan Park looking for the otters to photograph, and that was why I went down there in the first place.
Yeah.
I saw parents who were so careful with their kid. Come on, let the child taste the mud. Let him eat that leaf. Yeah, you may get sick for a day or two. And after that, you'll never get sick from that again. Then when the parents don't show fear, the child follows suit. Like we've taken them out in the mangrove, they go, yeah, the mud is so dirty. Then you take the mud and you look at it, show them the crabs that live in it, show what lives on it, what it can do for you. Then when they make the connect, the fear is not there. Then they will touch it. They will see it.
And I have this unnatural fear of earthworms, which is, I'm ashamed to admit it. And I forced myself to hold them just so that my kids wouldn't inherit my, you know, ridiculous fear. And it's been horrible, but it's also helped because now they just touch them like there's nothing. And they know that, you know, how important earthworms are for, you know, for our plants to grow, for our vegetables to grow. So yeah, it's definitely the parents that need the work more than the kids, I suppose.
Because a child is by nature a very curious person.
Yeah.
And when you say, no, 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 that's what they do.
Yeah. I've been trying my best. I have been, you know, being as open as possible and just, you know, stopping myself. I was like, okay, it's mud. I can wash it. It's fine. And I need to, yeah, that's what we need to do, right? We need, everything can be cleaned. Food poisoning can be cured. You can recover from it. Let them taste the mud, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, you've been an environmentalist for a few years now, right? Do you think the dynamics of children's interaction with nature has changed throughout the years? You know, before and even now during the pandemic, you know, have you seen lots of changes happening there?
There's a very interesting change in that when you look at it, children can watch a TV program on something. Then when you take them out to look at the real thing, there is a bit of a disconnect. Mm. And that is why I always stress, you must live in an environment where possible, you can touch things. Remove the disconnect and have it so that a child goes outside, oh, look, there's a bush with a, what we call the cherry fruit. Mm-hmm. They can eat it. They pluck a hibiscus, they lick the base of the flower, and it's sweet. Things like that. We don't get that anymore. So between the theory and the practical, I do sense a growing disconnect. We need to get that back. We need to get them to see, touch, and feel things.
Definitely. But the problem is, of course, that so many of us are living in cities now, right? And not all of us are fortunate to have a garden. You know, we're living in apartments, maybe. It's really quite a concrete jungle, isn't it? And that, I guess, you know, even further intensifies that disconnect from nature, right? You know, what is some of your advice to sort of bridge that gap?
I think where we live is critical. When you look at housing developments and all that, a lot of them are so sterile. The taman, you have one tree in front of your house, and that's it. And you always plant trees that are convenient for city hall to take care of. But the plants have no meaning. That is why when I was going around Kapong Metropolitan Park, I was thinking, my God, if they had more fruit trees, even more odd birds would start showing up. That's why when the opportunity came to add in an advisory capacity, I took it. Because people need to grow the right plant. They need to understand how fish live. They need to see, oh, if it wasn't for that bird, or if it wasn't for that tree, the bird would have been able to feed its young. And when you see the young bird singing its heart out, you realize there is a beauty beyond what's in the mirror.
Definitely. And I wonder also, because of course you had that capacity to advise, you know, did you also advise about the importance of native species? You mentioned bees earlier, you know, the importance of, you know, having flowering plants so that we can attract the pollinators. You know, was that also part of what you advised everybody on?
Yes, it is, because the trees are important. If you have the right birds, you start getting to attract people to look at, oh, look at that, it's beautiful. Hey, look at the hornbill. Hey, look at that monkey coming for the fruit. Things like that. And if you get the right trees, you also have a chance for children to taste things which they otherwise wouldn't. Mm.
So when you had the chance to consult with city planners and also with property developers, you know, what were some of the other different aspects that you advised them to focus on to ensure that, you know, whatever biodiversity we have is preserved? I mean, whatever small patch we have, we really need to preserve that and to make sure that it's got the right elements, right, to attract, you know, the biodiversity back. Yeah.
Yes, especially when you look at plants. You attract insects, you attract birds, you attract certain mammals.
Yeah.
Then we have the right plant. All year round, there'll be wildlife for people to appreciate. If you happen to have the right location where you live, for example, in that park, I know there are developments coming around the edge, not to damage the lake, not to empty sewage into the lake. And then when animals come back into what they consider see our environment, we can appreciate it. We can see it. We can almost touch it. And it's fantastic. Like there are rare birds around parts of KL that even here in Langkawi, we do not get.
Really? Such as?
When I was walking around the park the other day, I saw a bird called the white-breasted waterhead. And it was happily strutting around without a care in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Langkawi, he feeds you, it runs.
Okay.
So, hey, if you have a chance like that, you can bring that out to people, the children, all the better.
Yeah, and as we've seen in this pandemic as well, like, you know, whenever there was I suppose we were let go, we were allowed to leave the house. You know, everybody was flocking to parks, were flocking to nature areas. And having that access to nature or green spaces or even a garden during that time, right? It just really helped people through these tough times, right? But I guess, you know, if, for you as a naturalist, right, what would your advice be to, even if we don't have a lot of space, you know, just to make sure that there's some sort of greenery or nature in our lives, maybe in our backyard? You know, what are some simple things that we can do to also attract pollinators, you know, to just make it a nice thriving biodiversity?
Well, the diversity of plants comes to mind straight away. Shrubs like the hibiscus. Then there's one called the Poco Salam. Mm. They attract birds by the dozens. And very different birds. Hibiscus will attract the nectarines, whereas the salam will attract those that eat a lot of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Then the hibiscus also give birds like the bulbul a chance to build a nest. And children can look at that and appreciate the life cycle of the bird. And when it comes to fruit trees, well, you know what it's like when you were young. Yeah, rambutan tree with some fruit to climb up. Everyone, you're going to fall on and probably break a bone or something, but you had to go for the fruit. Things like that. That, to me, is what is important.
Yeah. Are you worried that, you know, now as we are keeping our kids home to keep them safe, right, that might actually cause a greater disconnect? Like, you know, we're losing all this important time that they should be spending outdoors, but they can't, right? We just can't, right? Are you worried that that might create an even greater disconnect?
Yes, it will create a greater disconnect if we don't take advantage of little gaps in between when we can go out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when I was working by giving advice to people like Kiara Bay, I was saying, plant the right thing. Then even if a child can't go to Taman Tasik Perdana, but just walking around where he lives, you can see this. But just looking in the lake, you can see fish, aquatic life. And all this helps a child relax. It's an innate thing in all human beings that nature helps us calm down. Nature helps us understand a bit more. And so if you build it right, then you will get it right.
Definitely. And do you think that the pandemic has actually taught us some valuable lessons, you know, about how to build back better?
For some of us, yes. For some of us, I'm afraid it's just served to push them to be a little more greedy.
Oh, dear. Okay, all right. Well, I guess, you know, just to conclude, Aidy, you know, any last message that you'd like to leave us with about, you know, why we should not lose sight of, you know, the greenery, why we must keep that as an important part of our daily lives. But also, I suppose, you know, a message to parents, you know, with children about why they need to make sure that their kids have, you know, access to the outdoors and they have access to nature and, you know, how that can improve their lives as well.
Okay, when it comes to children and nature, it's very simple. You don't have to travel 5-10 kilometers to a super duper park, walk around with 10,000 other people. If you live in an area where you can plant something, plant the right bushes, plant the right tree, any chance you get, just take the child out for a walk to look at what is in the neighborhood. We tend to think of everything as it's better over there, not here.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to say, look, kid, let's take a walk outside. Oh, you see that bird? Or you see this fruit, or you see that flower, it makes a huge difference. And as for potential developers and current developers of properties, for example, especially in KL, plant right. Put as much green as you can outside where you are. So when people go out, they don't have to travel to see the greenery. It's there. And I have to admit, that's why I enjoy working with all the people that I consult with right now.
Mm-hmm. Are they very open to your suggestions, to the advice that you're giving as well?
So far, the biggest success I've had is with Kiara Bay. They seem to be taking it to heart. And I do appreciate that. Because from my point of view, you are right on the edge of Kapong Metropolitan Park. And if they are going to carry on as they're doing now, it will minimize the impact on the lake, which will then benefit everybody.
Yes, that is a beautiful lake. And I did also go in search of the otters like you did. It's such a lovely place. It would be devastating to see anything bad happen to it, like, you know, like if construction pollution goes in there. I mean, the whole value of the place is lost, isn't it, if that were to happen?
Oh, I have seen the ones I photographed eating fish at the court.
Wow.
It was 5 meters from me.
Wow. I only saw one swimming away from me. Lucky you. I think it knew you were the right person to come and visit. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today, Aidy. I've been speaking to Aidy Abdullah. He's a naturalist. And we were talking about how we can bridge that nature gap and also why it's important to spend time in nature. If you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/earth. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.